This is Jonathan Charst with Real GM Radio. I'm talking to my friend Willie Funk, a licensed attorney and semi-professional gambler and former D3 basketball player. He wanted me to mention that. He thought he had more credibility, but we shall see. Anyways, we're talking about the NCAA tournament. Willie, what do you think about Wichita State, Kentucky? That was obviously the game of the weekend.
Oh, definitely. I think that's an instant classic, really. You had a great storyline that CBS was able to sell pretty effectively at the traditional power. I thought it was a good chance to really get some guys on Wichita State finally playing against elite-level athletes like Klee Anthony Early and Ron Baker.
Yeah, I liked Ron Baker. I think he's what you would call deceptively athletic. He's probably their best player.
Yeah, I think he'd try and come back down the floor after Kentucky baskets and really assert himself immediately. I think he really showed a lot of confidence, willingness, and ability to get those buckets when he needed them.
I guess the question with him is whether he can run point full-time. It'll be hard to do with Van Vliet there, obviously.
Yeah, and I think Van Vliet was kind of revealed a little bit. He was effective in spots because the Harrisons aren't particularly quick, obviously. But I thought Baker did a good enough job to show that he could at least be a backup to at the next level. And I think he shoots the ball well enough. He guards just well enough. I think he'll definitely make an NBA roster.
What do you think about him as a white Shelvin Mack?
Oh, wow. I think he's got a little more size than Mack.
They're both 6'3", 6'4".
Athletic ability is pretty comparable. Mack seemed to be a little bit more of a streaky shooter than Baker, but I think he might be a little bit bigger, better version of Shelvin Mack. I think that's a fair comparison, I guess.
Yeah, I guess for me, the story of that game was Julius Randle passing the ball and playing defense. I was really impressed. He got 6 assists. That was a career high. And they wouldn't have won, I don't think, if he wasn't passing the ball in that game.
Yeah, no, definitely. I thought he was a huge impact. You could see the difference when they bring in Kuipers to take him out and when Cauley Stein went out as well. I think Cauley Stein really left a big mark on that game just because even on pick and rolls, if you committed too hard to the Harrison, he could just throw it up over the top to him. And on defense, obviously, he was a problem.
The guy's 7 feet tall and he played wide receiver in high school. That's pretty preposterous.
Oh, yeah. The athletic ability and the talent, unreal. It's what's upstairs. It kind of worries you.
Well, I'm thinking with Cauley Stein, it has to be like Miles Plumlee in Phoenix. You put him somewhere where he has to do very little thinking. He just runs up the floor. They throw him oops, and he blocks shots.
Oh, yeah. And I think we've talked about this before. I think his ceiling could be as high as Tyson Chandler type. If you can get him to kind of stay in his defined role and not try and go outside of it.
Yeah, that's probably fair. The question for me then is whether, if I was drafting a player, whether I take him over Julius Randle.
See, that's tough. I don't think so. I think you're looking at the floor for Cauley Stein being a lot lower than Randle, because Randle, I think, comes in at the very worst as starting four in the league. I don't know if he's going to be a cornerstone player for the franchise, but you saw flashes in that Wichita State game doing more than just, power moves to his left hand all the time. I think you saw him able to pass the ball and really have a better awareness of what was going on around him.
Yeah, because he has to be able to get other guys' shots, because his defense is never going to be great with his T-Rex arms. So he's got to be a player in the high post, dribble in the guy, get guys' shots, and be a more all-round offensive player, I think. He's going to be an interesting guy for sure to track. But me, I like my bigs to play defense. And if they can't play defense, they better be Dirk Nowitzki or Blake Griffin or Kevin Love. And I don't think that Julius is any of those three players.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to really expand his offensive game to make up for what he lacks on the defensive end. You look at it, his style of play is like a less athletic version of Blake Griffin. I think you need to get him to start to step away from the basket, maybe do some face-ups. And I think he has... You look at him shoot, he doesn't have awful mechanics. I think the potential's there. Whether it'll put it all together, though, you just can't be sure.
Yeah, for me, I'd much rather go with Vonleh, because I know what I can get out of him. He's much bigger. He's more refined player. He's stronger. He has a more natural position. And he's got longer arms, so he'll block more shots and get more rebounds.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, he's looking like he'll probably be at least a top 10, if not a top 5, 6, 7 pick. That'll be something to track going forward for Vonleh. I guess then let's go on to this weekend's games, try to make ourselves a little bit of money. Let me let's start with the we'll start the bracket. We'll go from left to right. So that leaves the first matchup club is UCLA Florida. What's your first take on that? The line is UCLA plus 5.
I mean, when you look at that line, I really am inclined to take UCLA straight. I mean, I took him in my bracket when I was out in Vegas. I put a small wager on him to take the region, UCLA. I think you just have so much size there, and the only thing you wonder is were they going to show some respect for the value of a possession? With Kyle Anderson, you just never know what's possible, where that ball could end up. But I think they've kind of been putting it together better. I don't love the Ware twins down low because they're face the basket types. But the way they've been playing and sharing the ball, I mean, they look like a team that's rounding out, a lot like Kentucky.
Yeah, like that's my big concern with that game. I'm a big UCLA fan, but I wonder how the Ware twins will do against Patrick Young and Willie Aguette on the glass. Like, rebounding could be a really big problem for UCLA in this game. Because Patrick Young could probably bench press both Ware twins.
Oh, yeah. No, and Patrick Young is going to be key because if he's the onus is going to be on him to get all the boards. You saw that in the Albany game even. They struggled to kind of keep up with those guys. And Patrick Young is the only one who's down there with man size, really. I mean, you look at Yagette's probably around 6'6 or so. But Patrick Young's a man, and that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think for UCLA, what they're going to want to do is attack Florida's guards, especially with Jordan Adams. I think he's too big for Florida's guards. He's pretty much just gets buckets at will. Let me rephrase that. Give him the ball all the time in college. Let him score 25 points tomorrow on this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the size of all those wing spots for UCLA, the athleticism and the length. I mean, they're bringing Levine off the bench. You know, we got Scotty Wilkins, smart heading player, makes the right play. These are much smaller guys. You look at Kyle Anderson, he's going to swallow them up.
Well, they're going to have to cross-switch, which is going to leave Wilbekin on Norman Powell, who's 6'4", 215, or Jordan Adams, who's 6'5", 220. So I think what you say, you invert the offense, you pound those guards down low. That's how they beat Arizona in the Pac-12 championship. They just killed McConnell and Johnson on the post. And that is such a hard thing to guard for most teams because they can't handle that, having their bigs play on the perimeter and their guards playing down low. So you know you say they score points. But as you talked about, yeah, it's Anderson, Lurie's, it's rebounding and turnovers, I think.
Yeah, it's all about the turnovers, really, for UCLA. If they can avoid them, I think they'll be good. Because you're talking about that Arizona team with Johnson, who's a superb athlete. And, I mean, Wilbekin and those guys are make no mistake, great players, but they're not athletes on the level of Johnson. So if he's struggling down there, and by the way, Johnson had about 4 or 5 blocks last night against Gonzaga. I mean, if he's not getting it done down there against them, I mean, the Florida guys are going to be in serious trouble.
Yeah. I think worth pointing out, though, like, Gonzaga runs out Kevin Pangos and Little John Stockton, man. I was watching the game. They looked like an AAU game. Like, oh, some suburban kids playing the SoCal All-Stars. That was not much of a game.
No, that was absolutely ridiculous last night. I mean, there's only so much Mark Few could do in that game, and you almost felt for him. And I mean, that's what happens. I mean, Arizona goes so deep on that bench, even without Brandon Ashley. They went out last night looking like a real serious outfit.
Oh, yeah, they're a really good team, but we'll get back to them in a minute. Let's go back through the rest of this part of the bracket. So the winner of UCLA Florida will play the winner of Dayton Stanford, and that line opens at Stanford minus 3.
I mean, that's a game that I'd be reluctant to touch, honestly. I mean, you like Stanford because they've got guys on the outside that can score, and they've got a lot of size to look really good against Kansas. And this is going to be another team that they're going to. And Dayton is going to be another team that's going to struggle to get buckets against them. But at the same time, they've been scrappy. You don't really know how Stanford's going to come to match up, especially with some of those defensive guards for Dayton. That's just a hard one for me to get a feel on, and I'd probably stay away from it.
Yeah, I don't think either team is all that great. I thought that whole side of the bracket was pretty overseeded. I'm thinking that Archie Miller is just going to watch that Stanford-Kansas game and say, oh, let's press all the time. Because Stanford's got no point guard, the guy is injured, and they could not handle the really basic Kansas press. That was just guys, just full court man, basically, and they freaked out constantly.
Oh, yeah, and that's been a theme all tournament long when these teams have faced the press. It's unbelievable to me how readily they throw the ball directly into the corner off the inbounds. It's basketball 101, and I don't understand how they continue to do it. Even after out of the timeout, they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just kids get sped up. It's like, it's not that first time you break the press, it's that third, fourth time. You have one or two turnovers in a row, and their mind just starts going blank, and they just start, like, panicking, basically. That's my read on it situation. I don't know. Let's go down to the next part of the bracket, which would be Michigan State, Virginia. Oh, and Michigan State's opening at -1. Did something happen? Did they lose their whole team in a plane crash? What?
See, the thing here is, I think a lot of people are still underselling Virginia. This is a game where I'm going to go Michigan State, but I think this is going to only be a 5 or 6 point game, and probably because of free throws at the end might stretch it out to 7 or 8. I think Virginia is just such a consistent team. They play solid principles on offense. They get good shots. And a lot of people sell them short, act like it's a crawl. The offense isn't a crawl. It's not. I saw them come down yesterday, beat the press, kick it to Joe Harris, open three. I mean, they'll do that. They're just not going to take a shot that they don't want. They don't feel comfortable taking. And then defensively, they were able to dictate against smaller guards than Memphis, who got frustrated quickly. And I don't know, they certainly won't have that same advantage against Michigan State, but I think it's going to be closer than what you might think. But I think at the end, there's just not much you can do about the firepower Michigan State has. That starting five is better than almost a damn NBA team. You look at Payne with his size and outside shooting, Gary Harris, NBA player. You got, if Appling plays well, that team's pretty unstoppable.
Yeah, I would say Appling will probably be the key player in this. If they can turn him over and get him doing stupid things, then they might have a chance and get some easy runouts. Because, like, they're not going to be able to execute Michigan State. And Michigan State's way more athletic and they're bigger. So they won't be able to score on them, period, I'm guessing, in the half court.
Yeah, I mean, Appling's always a question mark, though. You always wonder if he's going to show up and be responsible with the ball. Like Kyle Anderson, you don't know if he's going to come to play. But I think with Michigan State, what makes them so strong is that Gary Harris can slide him over and let him bring the ball up and run the show. And I don't think Izzo would hesitate to do that.
Yeah, Valentine's pretty good, too. I mean, they're a real stacked team. I got them winning the whole thing, so. All right, the next part of this bracket, we got UConn, Iowa State. The line opens at Iowa State -1.
This is another tough one. I think UConn has those small guards. DeAndre Kane's going to give them trouble, I think. How much trouble? I mean, you wonder, because Iowa State has some athletes, but neither team really has any presence down low. So that weakness from Iowa State losing Niang is pretty nullified. But I mean, I think it comes down to if Kane plays like he did against North Carolina, they keep hitting threes at that 50% clip or whatever they've been doing so far in the tournament. It's going to be a tough team for UConn to keep up with.
Yeah, I got no real feel for this game either, because I think it's going to be an up-tempo, rock'em sock'em kind of game. And I like UConn's point guard more than Shabazz. But yeah, they got no size to punish Iowa State down low. So Iowa State can play their little gimmick five-man offense without much of a worry. Yeah, and I mean, they got the size to deal with Kane. They can put the guy Chrome on him, who's about 6'6". For UConn, it'll probably be DeAndre Daniels, because he's the one guy Iowa State really can't match up with. He's so 6'8", 6'9", he can handle and shoot. But he's a real inconsistent player. If they get him going, they could win this game. But yeah, I would probably stay away from it too.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch it, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say DeAndre Kane got a little more magic left, and they're going to squeeze by. I'm going to go ahead and say 8 points. Through fouls, of course, but I think it'll be close. But I think Iowa State gets by with with the bigger guard.
Yeah, I'm thinking whoever wins this game is not going to have much of a chance in Michigan State, so it's not a big deal.
Oh, no. They're going to get steamrolled. And Virginia, it could very well be Virginia, even.
Yeah, I would say the winner of that Michigan State-Virginia game wins this bracket. I think that's pretty fair to say. For both first two. For Florida-UCLA also. Okay, on the other half of the bracket, we're looking at San Diego State at Arizona. Arizona's a 6.5-point favorite.
Well, as you well know, I have a bone to pick with Steve Fisher after that New Mexico State game, and failing to cover that 7.5. But that having been said, I think this is an interesting matchup in that both teams are going to have some real high-level athletes. The difference is Arizona's athletes know how to play basketball. So I think this one, 6.5 is a lot of points, especially when you're talking about a defensive team that's as strong as San Diego State is. But I think there's just too much skill and athleticism on the Arizona side. And especially after that, watching that performance against Gonzaga, it's just impossible for you to go against them. So I'm going to say they'll cover it.
Yeah, I'm real big on Arizona. I mean, I think they figured themselves out without Brandon Ashley. They've got a new plan. They got a lot of shooting. They still got a bunch of size up front. And what they're going to do against San Diego State, they will turn them over, get runouts into open threes. Because they can have Gordon run the point, McConnell run the point, or Nick Johnson can all push the ball. And they got a bunch of little white guys, York and Pitts, just spotting up on the three-point line. And they got that big guy inside. And they got RHJ can push the ball, too. I think Arizona's a Final Four team, and I think they'll beat SDSU pretty easily. SDSU can't shoot, and you just can't get that much of a weakness, and they'll split it mercilessly.
No, I think the only chance that Arizona doesn't cover this is if Johnson takes it upon himself to take over the game. I think he could struggle with the longer athletes in San Diego State, and if he falls into the trap of trying to take it over himself, it could be a problem for the Wildcat.
Well, for me with Arizona, I want the ball to go to Gordon or RHJ. I don't care who was the Pac-12 player of the year because he took the most shots. To me, those are best two players.
Yeah, I think that's true. And especially if Arizona can knock down free throws like they did against Gonzaga, they could run away with this.
Yeah, I understand with Gordon. He's a 43% foul shooter, and it don't look that bad a shot. I mean, it looks like it should be a reasonable.
That's an outrageous number. Like, when they say that on the broadcast, it's almost hard to believe.
Well, could you expect to see a guy, like, throw a slingshot at the fucking rim like he's DeAndre Jordan or something? But no, I mean, it looks right.
Yeah, it's like when Blake Griffin's percentage is so low, whereas I think his form looks pretty good. It's just hard to figure.
Yeah, he's got to get that figured out. Because I love Aaron Gordon, but he's got to get a jump shot at the next level at his size. With a jump shot, though, he's going to be a freaking monster.
That's always a big if.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like really that should be the main thing if I was an NBA team. I want to hire a shooting coach. Like, you know how in baseball they have hitting coaches? Every team should have a freaking shooting coach. Because you can't shoot, man. It really hurts your team.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Smart needs to get him a couple, too.
Yeah, we talked about this. I really think that's more to the Travis Ford, though, and the shot selection that does or does not occur at Oklahoma State. Because Marcus Smart takes two or three off-the-dribble threes a game with a hand in his face. There's no way you're going to take those shots and have a good percentage. I don't care if you're freaking Redick or something. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've covered it even in broadcast when they're covering all these Oklahoma State games on TV. It's just not in rhythm. I mean, half the time, at least, he's not taking shots in rhythm. But at the same time, like, you watch him brick three free throws in a row against Gonzaga, and you're wondering, how does this happen? I mean, you've been playing basketball for 20 years. Really? But, you know, I think there's still hope for him. I still like Marcus Smart. I just think jump shot is a surprisingly difficult skill to develop.
You know, really, I was talking to a baseball guy the other day, and he was telling me about, like, you know, the five tools in baseball. For the most part, the baseball teams don't develop those guys at all. They either have the skill set or they don't at 18. Like, if a guy can't throw or he can't hit for power, can't hit for average, they're pretty much out of luck. Like, that's almost like you learn that when you're, like, 12 or 13 years old, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain element of touch in a shot that you just have or you don't.
Or I guess it's like if you rebuild someone's shot, it's just so much learned muscle memory, and, like, will they revert back to their old shot? It's just hard to break a habit like that, I guess.
Yeah.
It's teaching somebody how to write again. Or like once you learn it one way, it's hard to go the other. I don't know. But yeah, if Aaron Gordon, but if he could, I think he has a shot, but he's still a good player. I love the way he can pass the ball at 6'9". I'm a big fan of tall passers. I think that makes the game so easier than anything else.
At the same time, I wonder if his willingness to share the ball is a byproduct of an undeveloped offensive game. Because, I mean, you don't see him scoring off of much else than dunks.
No,
so
I
that's
mean,
my concern with him.
I wouldn't say that. Because, like, I watched, like, Gordon this year. Like, he just runs point forward. He always, like, he's always looking for the better shot is all. He really sees the floor really well. He gets that big guy two or three easy dunks a game, basically. He can run pick and roll. He can... Really, the main thing is he can see the floor in the same way that Anderson can at UCLA. And, like, I'd rather a guy who can do that, really, than a guy, even a guy who can shoot. If my best player passes the ball, my team's going to be really good.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Gordon as you are, but I just don't think he's developed as much. He has as much of an offensive game as you'd like to think. And I think he's been able to be hidden within that Arizona system because there's so many other talented players on the floor with him.
Well, because you saw, though, without Ashley, he's actually scored more. Because that's the thing. He can really fit his game into everybody else's game. It's kind of like, to me, he's AK-47. And I think a guy like that is more valuable than people realize because you can always put him in a rotation. It'll help you out at multiple positions. And Gordon's by far the best defensive prospect in this draft. People talk like Wiggins, like, oh, Wiggins, great defender. Gordon is the great defender. He'll be able to lock up four
positions. I like Wiggins as a defender. I'm all with you on Wiggins being probably the most overhyped prospect in recent memory. But his defense, I'll give it to him on that. He's got so much length, and he plays hard. He seems to know what he's doing as opposed to on offense where it's one move, and if it's not there, it's the spin move. So, but I think he's a better defensive prospect than Gordon. I'm just not as high on Gordon as you are. It's also tougher to scout Gordon, I think, in the context of the people he's playing with. It's just really hard to get him in situations where you can get a full evaluation.
Well, first off, I never said Wiggins was the most overhyped player of the last, whatever it was you said. I'm a little lower than
recent
others.
Recent memory.
Don't put a statement that bold into my mouth, please. I'll make those statements myself.
Oh, I'll say it with my own mouth, man. I'll tell you right now, people call him a generational talent, like LeBron James. That's just not accurate. I mean, straight up.
Oh, well, yeah. If anyone's called Andrew Wiggins LeBron James, I'm not really trying to talk to them. That's absurd, obvious. That's on his face, an absurd statement.
I mean, that's how he was hyped coming into this season as a generational talent. Oh, just not, no.
Well, I mean, people were calling Shabazz Muhammad the number one pick in the draft last year. The hype is...
Okay, that's a good point. Shabazz, man, I've forgotten about him like he's off the face of the earth.
Actually, he's playing ball in Minnesota because, like, what he's good at is finding the ball and shooting it really quickly. Like, offensive rebounds, runouts, he just finds the ball. It's like a sixth sense with him. He'll get his points. He'll be a good NBA player, I think. Not a star, but... Now, we've got him sidetracked. We should get back.
I don't even think Shabazz is a starter, though.
Maybe not. Sixth man. He'll get a lot of buckets, though. I mean, probably not. He can't play defense. He's been a starter. But we've gotten sidetracked. We'll talk about Andrew Wiggins later. Let's get back to the rest of this bracket. So the bottom half of San Diego State, Arizona is... who's playing them? I'm going blank here. Okay. Oh, yeah. It's Wisconsin, and they're playing Baylor. Yeah. Wisconsin opens at -3.
This is another tough one that I wouldn't be too quick to jump onto. I really like Wisconsin, but I think when you look at that Baylor front line, as athletic and as long as they are, I think that's going to cause problems for anybody you play, especially with that zone being as effective as it was against Creighton. You just wonder if the streaky shooting on offense is going to hurt them. I think if they come to play and they play average even on offense, this would be a close game. If I had to choose a team, I want to take Wisconsin, but I just think Baylor right now is just playing too well.
I know you aren't downplaying the great Frank Kaminsky with his athletic ability. I mean, he's 7'1", 250. He'll be able to go okay with those Baylor guys. And Nigel Hayes has got some size, too, at 6'7", 250.
No, yeah, I just think it's going to be tough for them to find too much space to operate inside. They could fall in love with three, and if they don't shoot effectively, it could get ugly for them. I mean, it's a game that could go in a lot of different directions for me, and I'm not willing to put money on a game like that.
I'm going to say that I'm pretty confident in Wisconsin, I think. A, they're a much more balanced team. B, they have the size, so even if they can't, like, bang with Baylor, they'll survive inside. They have a bunch of big guys. Unlike Creighton, which is running a 6'7 power forward at this 5 position, which is just absurd.
Wisconsin, I see him taking inches away from Dougie McBuckets.
No, I'm telling you, he was the 4. Their 5 was Raggy at 6'7. McFresh was whatever was 6'8. Either way, that was like a JV freaking front line. That was like a D3 front line, what that was.
Yeah, they didn't have a chance.
Yeah, so they'll have the size to stay with Baylor. They got much better wings. I think that'll be a difference. Sam Decker and that guy Brust and Gasser, they're much better players than like Gary Franklin, Royce O'Neal, Torian Prince. All those guys are real kind of average to me. And like that zone's got a really big weakness in the middle of the paint, in the middle of it. And if you give, what's his name, Bo Ryan a week to break in that zone, he'll break it up pretty quickly. They got smart veteran players. They'll run good offense. They'll get good shots. And I think they'll handle Baylor pretty easily because they're too good to zone, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, that's another piece that's kind of reared its head during the course of the tournament is that the talent gaps between these teams are pretty small, getting smaller and smaller. So coaching is going to be a big deal. And I'm Scott Drew and exactly what I call the best coach out there. And you got to respect Bo Ryan, so I think that's somewhat of an equalizer in my mind. But I think Kenny Cherry is going to be the key to this game. He's able to shoot, you know, hit 4 out of his 5 threes again against Wisconsin. I mean, set the tone and really be able to get the ball spread around the offense. I think they could run a victory on this. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think they have the potential to win the game.
Well, see, he got his threes because they were doubling the post. Creighton had no choice. If I'm Wisconsin, I'm not doubling Austin or Jefferson. I'm going to make them beat me on 1-on-1 moves because I got pretty good big guys myself.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this Isaiah Austin-Kaminsky matchup goes. I think there'll be a lot of NBA types that are watching that matchup pretty closely.
I'm not sure that they end up putting Jefferson on Kaminsky because he's so much stronger than Austin. Austin's 225 maybe. He'll just get
I'm keeping my fingers crossed they'll give him the challenge.
Well, because they'll have to guard Nigel Hayes, because then at 7'1", he's so much taller than Hayes. If I was Scott Drew, that's what I would do. So he'll probably go the other way, because that's, you know,
with yeah. Hayes.
But yeah, I'd say I'm a little more confident in Wisconsin than you. I'm thinking Wisconsin beats Baylor, and then Zona beats them pretty easily in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I mean, after the way Arizona was looking last night, it's hard for me to see anybody else coming out of the region.
Yeah, they look pretty freaking good. I'm pretty confident in that Final Four pick. Now let's go with, I think, probably the most interesting of the four regions, the bottom right one, and that's where Wichita State's already out and Duke's already out. So on one side of it, you got Kentucky at Louisville. Kentucky is a 5-point underdog.
See, this was that was a big classic game yesterday that I just didn't go near as far as wagering. I mean, you look at Kentucky coming together, it's also going to be tough to trust those slow, bigger guards, those Harrisons, against Russ Smith and Jones. I just think they're going to get up into them. They were able to handle some of the Shockers' pressure yesterday on the perimeter, but they also turned it over a lot in the first half. I think if they don't tighten it up from the jump, it could be going the other way quickly on them. But at the same time, I haven't seen Louisville play in person. I wasn't thoroughly impressed with their personnel. So this is another one that I don't really know how to call. I mean, if Russ Smith is playing well, I think Louisville wins. But I can see him struggling, you know, even with the size on the perimeter. But even after that, if he's able to penetrate big from Kentucky, he's not going to be able to finish over him.
Actually, I have a GIF of him dunking on Randall. It's pretty funny, but never mind with that.
I wouldn't be expecting that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I guess for me, because like with Wichita State, they had double the post a lot against Kentucky. Louisville's got the big men to just single them up, and I think that really shuts off the Harrisons' offense because they can get their. They are much bigger than Russ Smith and Chris Jones, so in theory, they should be able to score over the top of them, especially Aaron Harrison.
Yeah, and I'm anxious to see Harrell against those monsters from Kentucky. I mean, that's going to be an interesting matchup to me. I think Harrell's a specimen down there. you look at Randle and Cauley Stein, they obviously are as well. I think it could be an interesting war down there. You gotta worry though that Louisville's thinner down low, and if he gets in foul trouble, they could be facing some serious problems early.
Though they got some guy like Mathiang or something, Maktar. I don't remember his name exactly.
I mean, but for whatever reason, they start Van Treese or whatever that guy's name is, and he gives them nothing.
Yeah, but he could probably guard Cauley Stein because Cauley Stein don't really do anything. I would assume he'll look, then they have Harrell on Randle. That'll be the matchup, is Montrez on Randle.
Yeah, and that'll be an entertaining one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Montrez a little shorter, so you think Julius score would top him pretty easily enough. Well, if you can just play him off that left hand, I guess. If that was Montrez, I'm saying, please use your right hand. Do beat me with that.
Cut off his left and let him try and run him over. I don't think that's going to be happening.
Yeah, those two big boys right there. Yeah, that should be a really good one. Yeah, I'm thinking Louisville's going to win this, but I'm not too confident in it. I took Wichita last round, and that burned me. I'm not sure about that one either. I guess the last game of the day we'll go to, that is Tennessee at Michigan. I don't know why I'm saying at. It's how the freaking thing reads it out. But whatever. Michigan is a 2-point favorite. That's it. I have to be more than that.
You know, I think Tennessee could run away with this one. This is one that I actually feel pretty strongly about. Probably the strongest feel I have for any of these Sweet 16 games. You just look down low. Michigan lost Mitch McGarry early in the year, and now they have almost nothing down low. And you're going up against two grown men in Stokes and Wayman. I mean, those two guys have just bowled their way to the Sweet 16 at this point. And then you look on the perimeter, they have McCray and Richardson, long athletes who can defend and score. Richardson's been averaging over 19 a game this tournament run. So you put those guys on Stauskas and LeVert. I think Stauskas and LeVert, as creative as Jim Beilein is, they're going to struggle to get open looks at the basket. And if they get frustrated early, this could get out of hand fast, just like the last few games Tennessee's played.
That's interesting. Yeah, Tennessee's been killing teams, haven't they, since they beat Iowa. They could be one of the next first four to Final Four team, I think, because they've got the pieces. And I really do want to see McRae and Richardson versus Stauskas and LeVert. That's going to be a hell of a matchup. Because, like, if you want to know what he can do against NBA shooting guards, this game will tell you that. Because he won't see two better wing athletes than those two guys in Tennessee in the NBA.
No, absolutely. I think that's why. Even if they do play an average game, they play decently, they're just not getting offense from anywhere else. I mean, Spike Albrecht isn't going to come in and save the day again, I don't think. And you just aren't going to get anything down low against Stokes and Wayman. That's just not going to happen.
The thing but for me is, like, what are they going to do with GR3? Because he cannot guard any of those two big boys. That's not going to be good for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's in an awkward position there, too. He's going to have to step up, and you're going to have to... Beilein's going to have to be creative in how he utilizes his guys. And if you're not looking at any coach to really think outside of the box and try and find a way to find a way, I mean, it's him. But at the same time, I just really don't think he has the pieces to hang with those Tennessee Volunteers. And I think Tennessee wins by 15.
Jeez. That's a hot take right there. Well, I'm thinking about it. Like, yeah, because... against Texas, they put GR3 on one of the big men, and Texas big men, A, are poorly coached, B, can't score, so it was no big deal, really. But against Tennessee, they're just going to pound them in low all game. Well, they have to go in a zone. That's what teams have been doing against Tennessee. They've been zoning them, and that leaves Richardson and McRae shooting shots, and they're making them now. Because that was a thing for them for a while. They've had good post players. It's been their outside shooting for the last year and a half has been very inconsistent. And I guess they found it at the right time. Because, yeah, there's just no real answer for that if you don't have two good big men. And Michigan doesn't have those two big men. Like, will they have to go two guys out? They might have to.
Yeah, Richardson over here, just coming into the tournament, labeled as a purely defensive player, comes out, starts making threes at a ridiculous clip. I mean, it got to the point when I was, even in that first game watching Iowa, where every time he touched it and shot it, you just assumed it was going to go in. And I think if they're able to keep that hot shooting, and I don't see any reason why they won't, you know, I don't think that Spike Albrecht out front on that zone is going to really bother anybody, get up in their face. I think they're going to move the ball around well. I think Quanzo Martin will make sure to drill into them to move it quickly. look down low and then kick out. And if they're getting open looks, there's no sign that they're going to be missing them.
Yeah, to me, like, they're kind of like a small version of the Memphis Grizzlies, that Tennessee team. It's the same kind of style of basketball. Like, they're just going to brutalize you for 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, we've made this comparison before. It's like Zach Randolph down there with Stokes. I mean, he's just going to bull you, and there's nothing that you're going to be able to do about it. I mean, it's like prison yard basketball. Just throw people out of the way. I mean, there's just...
I mean, yeah, like, I don't think in the NBA, though, I guess it might slide. Zebo did choke a guy in the freaking playoffs and got away with it. I think it's just, like, what happens, it's like, it's a standard effect. Like, if you're just fouling somebody every single possession, the refs just stop calling it. And you get the reputation of a strong player, and they let it go. It's like, no, they're fouling every single time. Foul him out of the game.
Yeah, and it's like an NCAA tournament. When VCU did it, Butler did it. When you're the aggressive team, on defense or on offense, and you're the aggressor, they're going to just, as soon as you establish that at the beginning of the game, the referees are just going to let that go and just say it's physical play. But then once you get fouled, once the more passive team starts trying to come back at you, they're going to start seeing those as fouls. And I think that's the way it's worked with them. It worked that way against Iowa. They got benefit of a lot of calls against Iowa, and they had free rein down low. And I think if that trend holds against Michigan, Michigan just isn't going to have a chance in the game.
I wonder if the refs are intimidated by Quanzo Martin. Because he has a very intimidating presence, obviously. Compared to all these little white guys in the sidelines, you know. Like Jim Boeheim is just whining all the time. Like, wah, wah.
I mean, I think they're so physical down low that you just assume that they're just bigger and that's what's happening. They're just using their muscle and they're not seeing it as fouls. So if that keeps up, you know. They're going to keep doing it, and there's not a damn thing Michigan's going to be able to do about it.
I think this is the best bracket, because no matter how it goes, it'll be a very compelling matchup. I would love to see those Louisville guys play Kentucky those Tennessee guys play Kentucky or Louisville again. Play Kentucky once, and that was a freaking free-for-all with Randall, Cauley-Stein, Maimon, and Stokes. It was just brutality. And that would be. I think Tennessee could probably win that. Then a little interesting game, and then if Michigan played those, it'd be interesting. I'm gonna go ahead and say Tennessee wins that. I had Wichita State and that my bracket the first time, but I'm gonna take Tennessee. I think they got all the pieces.
Oh yeah, I really hope it's Kentucky and Tennessee that advance, because you know the lines are gonna go heavily towards Kentucky. And I'm telling you right now, those Harrison boys are gonna be in trouble against Richardson and McCray.
Yeah, if they beat Louisville on top of beating Wichita State, they'll be a huge favorite. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a real opportunity to have a real good bargain play. I like those odds.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's go back to the front. I'm going to say the games I like in the Sweet 16. I like UCLA. I'd probably just take them straight up because whatever. I like Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan State, and then Tennessee. Those are the five for me are the ones to go with. And I'm going to stay away from the Kentucky game, the Iowa State game, and the Dayton game.
Well, I guess I'll look at it this way. I'll go day to day. Thursday, I think you have to like Arizona against the San Diego State team that just can't score, just doesn't understand offensive basketball. And I also like UCLA straight over Florida. I think that's just too much size, and the way they're playing right now, it's not a lot that Florida's going to be able to do. Going to the Friday, I'm going to obviously stay away from Dayton. That's just an unpredictable matchup. Gun to my head, I'd take Stanford. Wisconsin-Baylor, I think that game could go so many different ways. I'm just reluctant to even... name a winner. Moving on to Friday, I love Tennessee over Michigan. And I like Michigan State over Virginia, but I think that one's going to come down to the wire. And I don't. My nerves will not appreciate if I do follow through on it. I think Michigan State takes care of business. Kentucky, Louisville, that's another one I really have a feel for, because I think foul trouble come big for Louisville's big, and that could result in a Kentucky blowout, but that's a hard thing to bet on. Iowa State, UConn, another one that's just too close to call. So I think the ones to go with are Tennessee over Michigan straight up, Michigan State is a 1-point favorite. Arizona is a 6.5-point favorite. And UCLA straight up over Florida.
Yeah, man, it should be a fun weekend for sure. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty.